episode 1 of Ministry Minded, a show that seeks to reveal God's matchless grace in an oftentimes messy ministry. We are presented by The Majesty's Men, a site for young men by young men seeking to engage fellow young men with the gospel of Christ. And today I'm pleased to have as our very first guest of the show, R.J. Grunewald. This interview has been pre-recorded, so listen, enjoy, and I'll catch you on the other side.
RJ, just first of all, a lot of our listeners probably aren't familiar with you or your work. They might not be. So just introduce yourself and where you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is RJ, like you said, and I am a pastor at Faith Lutheran in Troy, Michigan. I've been actually at Faith. It's actually the church where I grew up at. Both my wife and I have grown up here. And so I got involved in ministry I just fell in love with student ministry. That is what connected me to our congregation, and then, got very involved doing that. And then recently I've gone through seminary, because the congregation, as I've been on staff doing youth ministry, they've decided they wanted me to become a pastor here. So I serve as one of our pastors on staff, in an area both my wife and I, we love the church. It's the church that we both grew up at, love this place. And so just love being here. I've been married for, I got to get this right now, because since this is around the air, got married in 07. So 8 years right now.
Wow,
so
congratulations.
9 years in November. So
awesome.
We have 2 kids, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, who keep us constantly busy. But I love it. Even more than loving my vocation as a pastor, I love being a dad and a husband. And so it's just an awesome thing, to be able to do all of this, to be able to be able to teach grace in the church, but even more so to be able to see light bulbs go off with my kids and stuff like that. It's just a cool thing. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Now, this might be a weird question, but how would you sort of describe yourself? Like, what is RJ passionate about? Like, what makes you tick?
Oh man, what makes me tick? I think something that's been important for me when it comes to, especially like writing, teaching, preaching, that kind of thing, is I love theology, and I love really, especially like when it comes to like the books by the dead guys, I'm all about it. But what I also realize is that most people aren't there. And so I just want to be all about theology, but for everyday life. And so for the person who isn't going to read Luther, I want to say the same things that he has said. I want to say the same things that the apostles said. I want to say same things that many of the great reformers said, but I want to say it in a way that normal people can understand. And so, I want to preach these core truths of law and gospel, some of the things that we're going to talk about. But I want to teach it in a way that people can relate to and understand and connect with. And so that's what I try to do with all my writing, my preaching. All right, for the people who are there listening, the normal people, so they're stay at home moms, they work in the coffee shop, they work in a plant. How does that meet them where they are? Instead of me just trying to impress people with my theological language or something like that, people don't care about that. And so I just want to preach and teach in language that normal people, in a sense, it's I'm translating it for people.
Sure, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And so that's why I'm passionate in my writing, my preaching, my teaching, even in conversations. I think that kind of spills out of that. So I'll read books all night long that I would never dare recommend to people, because I know that it just they wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, sure. I want to ask you a question about that, but I'm going to save that for later.
Yeah.
I will ask you, because you mentioned it, and I was sort of following you as you were going through it, but I know you just recently got ordained at your at Faith Lutheran. So sort of just describe that process and just like what you liked about it and just the whole thing of start to finish of the ordination process.
Yeah. Well, the process that we are in, I'm doing a distance education program through Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And so the way that program designed is the congregation actually has to say they want you to be a pastor at that congregation in order to get into the program. And so a couple of years ago, our congregation said, all right, we want you to be one of our pastors. And so we are going to get you trained through this distance education program. And so then started that program a couple of years ago. And then while doing classes online, while serving in ministry on the staff here at Faith, just been a lot of studying, homework, all that kind of stuff. And then ordination kind of is the official mark then. All right, we have now officially called you. You've been certified, you've been trained. And there's actually continued ed that's basically required in that process. And so that was kind of all a part of that. And so going through practical stuff, preaching stuff, some of the more systematic stuff and kind of understanding the narrative of scripture and Lutheran confessions, all those kind of things that are necessary for Lutheran seminary. That's kind of all mixed in there. And then I'm still doing homework, so I'm not quite done yet.
Yeah.
And so for me though, the ordination was a cool moment of just, it's kind of a family thing growing up here of my family going here, my wife's family going here. And then the people who are gathered around is my church family. Like they have been around. Some of them taught me leading small groups as volunteer leaders in our student ministry when I was growing up. And so it's just a cool thing to be a part of. They're just super excited for me and the affirmation of them believing that God has called me to this place and that thing. And then also while doing that, the weight of being ordained, because I read through everything that we were going to talk about beforehand of specific vows and stuff like that. But then, hearing the pastor who's doing the service read through some of those while I'm standing in front of everybody or kneeling in front of everybody, there's just a burden feeling that when he's talking about rightly preaching the scriptures and how I live my life, and it's just like, oh man, what am I signing up for? Like this there's a huge responsibility to that that I knew what I was getting into, but in that moment, hearing that and bowing to that in front of everybody, it's like, okay, I'm in. So
this is real.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I know the sort of the similar thing. I grew up at my dad's church in South Carolina, and that's like, it's literally an extension of your family, and seeing all those people and growing up with them. There's a really special thing about that. And having a church family that's literally an extension of your family. Yeah. That's really special. And you said you were a student minister there. What is it like? I would say I also have a passion for youth ministry, especially preaching the gospel to youth today. And what do you think, what is it like sort of preaching stuff like law and gospel theology and those sorts of distinctions to youth? And where do you think, this is probably a loaded question, but where do you think like we have like succeeded and failed on that level of preaching that accurately?
I think one of the things that I've learned doing student ministry is first thing, if you can preach to students, you can preach to anybody. Because what I've learned, I mean, if I'm preaching something, and because I want to rightly distinguish law and gospel with our middle schoolers, the same I would with our adults. But middle schoolers aren't going to lie to me and pretend they're interested. And so you really have to figure out, all right, how can I as simply as possible communicate this to them and help them understand and teach them to do this, teach them to distinguish law and gospel and promote that understanding. When we do that for adults actually understand how to pretend they're listening, even when they are zoning off and thinking about other things, making checklists or whatever. So with student ministry, I've really had to figure out, all right, how am I going to teach this to them in a way that they're interested in? Mm-hmm. And if they're not interested, how do I help them kind of get there where they see the importance of that? How have I seen that succeed or fail in the church? I think it's kind of the same way that just not just student ministry, but all evangelical Christianity is that Christianity for most people has become about do more, try harder. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true with students as it is with adults. And so I mean, primarily, if I'm going out and I'm looking for student ministry resources, what am I going to find? Here's a dating series, which matters. We do dating series with our students, but it's primarily about here are all the things you need to do. Here are 7 steps to this, and it's not driven by law and gospel. It's driven by Allah. And what we do that is we strip away the power for the students to actually even do any of that stuff. And so,
that's exactly right.
And so almost every resource that I pick up for students is it's driven kind of by that same filter of it's the law. It's do this, A, B, C, whether it's growing your faith, friendships, evangelism, any of those things are all taken from a law perspective. And so, in student ministry generally, like we miss that. And that's just a symptom of the greater problem of the Christian church is people want the law because that's kind of what's within us. And that's what we're giving people, but it's not what people need.
Exactly. That's so right. Like, cause I was about to say, like, that's the thing that youth ministry has sort of become is just parents drop off their kids, hey, make them better, fix them, and just fix the problems. I wrote a piece about this. It's just almost like a youth play group. Just go and play and learn and be better.
Yeah.
And that's not really what youth ministry is should be for.
Right.
And so that's why I love stuff like this and just engaging youth with the true gospel. I think that's so important.
Well, in the church. The church so often comes up now, the idea of, all right, you see all these millennials flocking out of the church. And part of me is like, well, if all that they have been getting is do this and they are burdened down and feel like they can't do it, well, no wonder they're leaving the church. I mean, what are they actually getting there? And obviously that's not everybody who leaves the church, but I mean, I got to guess that a lot of people left the church because they've gone to church and never got Jesus at church.
Yep. Yep. And they've just gotten a list of stuff. And when you know you can't do it, you might as well just give up.
Right. Because if they want to get steps to do something, if they want self-help, they're going to get that. They can get that anywhere else. And the rest of the world can probably do that better than the church can. The thing that the church has to offer that the rest of the world can't is grace alone.
That's right.
Everybody else can offer the law. Now they're going to do it in different ways and it might not be quite the same standards as what the scriptures might teach when it comes to the law. But when it comes to what you should do and the burdens of it, people come into our churches experiencing that already.
That's exactly right. Now, just sort of switching gears here a little bit. You do a lot of your writing for your own website, rjgroon.com. You can sort of promote that. How long have you been blogging there? I haven't been following you that long, but I know I just love your writing.
Yeah, I think I've been writing probably on the blog for 4 or 5 years. And I've done blogging a number of times before. And so, but consistently on this, on rjgroon.com, been about 4 or 5 years. And so when I started doing that, it was primarily all just focused on youth ministry. And so it's written stuff for other youth leaders, stuff that I was teaching our students. And it's kind of shifted in the past couple years of more specifically just theology for the everyday person. And so more often now it's less about, all right, here's something for other leaders, but just for the Christian, it's kind of unpacking a law gospel theology or the doctrine of vocation or some of those ideas on there. And so it's a lot of it has just kind of been, I've always been passionate about writing, but I also need a place to kind of figure out how to do that. And so what I did know about writing is you got to write to become a better writer. And so just keep doing it and figuring out. And the more I do it, the more I figure out. And the more I kind of learn what is my voice and I'll copy some people from something and kind of adopt that and learn who I am more and more, and then get feedback from other writer friends and editors, and it just kind of helped mold me and help me figure that out. And then the cool thing is along the way is starting to see people resonate with that of finding people who have come back to the site or are subscribing and reading emails and responding to me, or even hearing from people around the world saying, all right, I can't find a church like this, but thank you for your message and what you're saying. And that's really like incredible when it starts to resonate with people, and to know that people are reading your stuff and being set free by the gospel. And cause that's what it's about for me is I love doing this. And so it's just another medium to share that message for me.
It is a sobering thought when you put a lot of stuff out there and then you don't really know who it touches or who it encourages. And then you get that random note from this random person that just says, I really enjoyed this. Thank you. And you never know who's going to read something that you put online. I think that's what just makes doing ministry and sharing stuff like this in this, you know, quote unquote social generation so unique, I think. And I, on that though, you know, I'm also an aspiring writer and avid blogger. And I would say, what do you think makes writing and sharing and all this sort of stuff, tweeting the gospel, you know, in the social media age, why do you think that's so pivotal that we do that on that medium?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to just the kind of the same ideas that happened in the Reformation, that the Reformation, now these weren't new ideas that Luther had. He kind of was at the right place, the right time, that there were other people kind of pushing these things. But Luke, because of things like the printing press, in a sense, his ideas, which weren't hit really his ideas, they were the scriptures' ideas, but it kind of went viral because of that. And so with social media and blogging, the ability that they're no longer our gatekeepers when it comes to who can publish. And so because of that, it is in a sense a new printing press kind of opportunity. And so because of that we have an incredible tool when it comes to writing, when it comes to websites, even self-publishing, all of those things really make it incredibly accessible for writers to be able to get the message of the gospel out there. And so it's absolutely something that needs to be capitalized. And it's something that Christians have done. Christians have always been about using technological tools to promote the gospel. And so early in the radio, that Christians were a part of, all right, getting sermons on the radio and some of those things. And the same thing now with podcasting. It's just there are evolutions of that. And so as Christians, I mean, how can we use that? Now, the danger in that is, because of how easy it is to publish, it's also really easy to put out a lot of bad stuff. And so that's where what I'm learning as a writer is just trying to learn how to actually be a good writer and not, and I know, like, I've written stuff and I've read it later and be like, oh man, that's just not good writing. And so now it's just trying to learn, because of how easy it is to publish. Like, sometimes everybody just publishes stuff and it becomes really hard to filter through and find the good stuff, which I think it's good that everybody's writing stuff. And so, but now the discipline then for us as writers is we don't want to take advantage of that and now put out subpar stuff.
Exactly.
And so you got to write, but also you got to work through and learn how to write and what are rules to writing and what is grammar and all the stuff that I don't like to do. is stuff now that I'm trying to learn. And I've had an editor friend now come alongside of me and say, I mean, man, you got really good ideas, but you don't know the rules of writing. And so it's hard. It takes work to figure out, but it's necessary because if we can go from now amateur writing to actually really solid theology that's also well written, then it's going to make it a lot easier then for people to read that too, to understand it because of clarity, but also to be interested. Because if we don't write something interesting, people are also just going to, because of how much is being written, if you don't get somebody in the first paragraph, they're going to skim through your blog and not care. And, and so you just learning to be a good writing, that matters.
Yeah. And you actually mentioned this, and I've heard this many times before, that the best way to become a good writer is just to write a lot of stuff and maybe not even publish it, but just write it. And I would say, besides that point, what are some of the things that you've learned that have really helped you become a better writer? Because I know we have a lot of guys that are probably listening right now are budding or aspiring writers, and they're doing stuff on The Majesty's Men. So what are some things that you've learned?
One I've learned, just reading a lot is necessary for a good writer, because none of the ideas that we're sharing are original ideas. I mean, this is nothing new. And especially when it comes to the gospel, my goal is not to say lots of different things. It's saying this one thing over and over again, just a thousand different ways. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always trying to read and read and read and just see what other people are saying and writing. And sometimes those things inspire ideas to write. Some things they don't, but they're just helping me in what I know and understand. And so the reading a lot, I think, is one thing that's been really important for me. I've also now been learning just the value of editing. All right, write, but then you also have to rewrite. And what I've started to do, which I absolutely hate doing, but my editor friend told me, you need to read your stuff out loud, which is absolutely painful and embarrassing if I'm doing this in my house and my family's doing something else. But when you read something out loud, it makes you pause and you're like, all right, that doesn't make sense. Or I wouldn't say something that way. And you catch things that you wouldn't if you didn't. And so, writing often, I kind of learned that and figured that out a while ago, but right now I'm learning edit, and then read it out loud. And that's a painful process. I don't like doing that. But now when I come back to the things that I've written after I've done that, it's way better. But it takes work.
I'm sure it does. And yeah, I've done the same thing reading through old stuff. And I'm like, oh wow, did I really say that? Or did I really write that? You just touched on this too. You know, it's very true. What makes a good writer is a good reader. And, you know, I'm sure you're reading a ton of books, as I am, and I'm sure a lot of people are, but what are some of the ones that have influenced you the most?
Oh man, there are so many good books. One of the books recently that I love, Mockingbird just put out their Law and Gospel book, A Theology for Sinners and Saints. I know Dave Zoll was one of the guys. I don't know all the authors that they had. It was a number of them. Outstanding law and gospel theology book. And so that's been one of them, Grace and Practice by Paul Zoll is one of my favorites that I love when it comes to just this idea of the one way love of Jesus. Also some of the Lutheran theology, Gene Veith does a really good job with some of his work. He wrote Spirituality of the Cross, which is kind of a summary of some of the Lutheran doctrine. And his book on vocation, God at Work, is by far my favorite when it comes to the idea of God's calling. I could keep going on and on. There are a lot of books, though. It depends just on subject or whatever. I mean, so it's all kinds of stuff, though.
Sure. That's awesome, though. I'm dabbling into a lot of those law and gospel theology books, and it's just been a great read. They're sometimes difficult reads if you read some of those, as we call them, the old dead wise guys.
Oh yeah. John Pless is another one that is a good law gospel book. Handling the Word of Truth is an excellent one. Of course, Luther's commentary on Galatians is kind of standard when it comes to Luther unpacking that theology of law and gospel.
Sure.
So there's a bunch of them. One that I recently, well, not too recently read, but that's been really helpful when it comes to, is more of a gospel book, Just Words by Jacob Price. Basically what he does in that book is each section of the book, he takes different metaphors of the gospel and just unpacks them. So he'll use the adoption metaphor of the gospel and explain how that kind of gives us one insight and angle on the gospel, or the legal metaphor, or the just a variety of the different metaphors in the gospel. And that's been helpful as a preacher, just to think about, all right, so if I'm preaching the gospel every week, what metaphors then am I noticing that the scripture uses? Because if you really press into a certain metaphor, that can drive it home in a different way. Sometimes because people have gotten so used to a metaphor that they don't even realize what it's saying anymore. And other times because it's a metaphor that people haven't heard, or not familiar with. And so that book's been really helpful just to kind of just remind me of those different metaphors or the sacrificial system or the debt metaphor, and just how all that kind of flows through the scriptures.
Sure. That's awesome. I'll have to check that one out. I haven't heard of that one. I'd also say, you've edited and you've written a few books, and we've sort of touched on them, but the one that I've read all the way through is your Galatian selections from Martin Luther. And as you were going through that process of deciding to, you know, as you, we were talking about earlier, of making Luther and Luther's writings, you know, accessible to the everyday man, so to speak, how did you sort of decide what to keep and what to exclude when going through that massive book?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is, all right, just, I was just reading through it, and what is going to most clearly, be at the heart of Luther's message. And so I had to get rid of plenty of really good stuff. And so, but reading through, if there's something that was more directed towards pastors, it's like, well, that's not who the book was for. When he gets into, Luther can get a little fiery when it comes to anti-Pope rhetoric. And so some of that, like I took out some of that stuff of just, all right, let's get rid of the stuff that if people don't understand the context, the history, or if something just gets too wordy, then to just try to trim that down as much as possible. And so it was just really just looking for, all right, what was hitting me when I was reading it, when it came to certain law gospel ideas that Luther was carrying through Galatians, what were some of those? And so I know, because I'll go back and even look at the full commentary on Galatians, and there's stuff that's not in there, that is brilliant, but I mean, no one's going to pick up the whole thing. And so, so just finding those nuggets and kind of, so some of those were just finding a single phrase that stuck out for me. And then, all right, what's around that, surrounding that, that also kind of helps us understand that phrase. And other things were just, there was complete paragraphs or a series of paragraphs that were loaded with gold. And it's like, all right, let's put that in there. And help lead people through that. But then also certain chapters just trying to figure out, all right, I need to cut something out because this is not flowing. Or there'd be chapters where he would have a main idea and I need to write a lot about something else. And so you have to pull things out sometimes that just, it was off the main idea. And so just, all right, well, that's a different point and a good point, but not the main point.
Sure, definitely.
So that was a lot of it. And I'm working on a similar thing with Romans. And so just the same kind of idea of, all right, there's a lot of good stuff that has to come out. And that one's going to look a little bit different because Galatians is actually still somewhat nice. It's in a book in a sequential sequence and really relatively easy to work with. Romans, it was a disaster. And so that one I really had to rip apart and move pieces around, order things by theme, kind of put some of my own thoughts and ideas in there to kind of keep it flowing. But same idea with that one. Romans is a heavy theological book centrally around just the justification by grace alone. All right, how can we carry that through? Something's going to have to go. But how do we keep pushing that idea forward?
Yeah, definitely. You know, just on that topic really quick, we've sort of touched on it, but for someone who maybe is not quite familiar or whatever, how, you know, in a nutshell, if you can, how do you make something as sort of heady and scholastic as law and gospel distinction, you know, accessible? Because I think a lot of people might be sort of, you know, taken, they don't want to engage in that because it just seems like something that's, they can't understand, but how do you make it understandable? I guess I would say.
Yeah. I mean, with Galatians, some of that, I'd still say the Galatians work is still a little bit heady. But what I did with that was try to remove some of the barriers, simply with design and even, calling out certain key phrases, making it much easier to skim through things. And immediately find ideas that a person would resonate with. And so some of that comes with that. But just general preaching the law gospel thing is just, you got to be able to speak the language of the people that you're serving. I mean, that would be true of any missionary. When you go to a place, you got to learn the culture, you got to learn the language. And if you can't speak their language, the message of the gospel, no matter how well you know it, is not going to get through to them. You need to be able to speak their language and understand what they're listening to and understanding their cultural practices. And the same thing is true when it comes to law and gospel. As much as we need to be able to exegete the scriptures, we also need to be able to exegete the people that we're trying to reach. And so by doing that, you can then take this idea of law and gospel, which applies across the board to everybody. But the more you understand somebody and their struggles and their world, the better than that you can then bring that into where they are. Not changing what you're communicating, the idea stays the same. But you can't just automatically throw out a word like justification and assume that people know what you're talking about, because that's just not, people don't. And so you got to figure out, all right, how can I explain this in a way that people understand? Forgiveness. All right, there's some idea of understanding that, but by unpacking an idea like that in a way that people understand, forgiveness classically, like in the scriptures, is a debt metaphor. And so if you really then begin to unpack that, all right, forgiveness and canceling a debt and what that means, to say, all right, there's no longer a debt. And then because our debt's paid in full, we now can cancel each other's debts. By really drilling into that metaphor and helping somebody understand it, that they can, that then you use debt to understand forgiveness, which then is unpacking justification, but you're not necessarily using all the language that makes us feel more important, but doesn't actually always help somebody.
Exactly.
Now, I still believe that certain words people should learn, but sometimes we just assume that people know them or are going to pick up on them just because we say them a lot. Mm-hmm. And so anytime, if I use the word justification, if I use the word righteousness, I'm usually also within that context trying to use synonyms that are saying, all right, if I say righteousness, I'm also going to say right standing with God, just so people kind of can pick up what I'm trying to communicate. Because there's so many of those words that we just don't.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that's, I mean, I learned that when I was speaking to youth every week, is just, you just can't throw out all these words and expect them to know what they mean.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's a learning process.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was just, you know, I must confess, I haven't read these other two books that you wrote either, but also one called The Little Church, Discipling Your Family, and also Addiction, Leaving the Vomit Behind. I must confess, I haven't read those, but I was just, you know, wondering, you know, just if someone's not familiar with those either, just, can you just give a short summary on those? Cause those sound really, really fascinating to me.
Yeah. Little Church, came from this phrase, every Christian family ought to be, as it were, a little church. And so the idea with that is, as parents, how are we leading our families as the pastors in our home? And so the idea in Deuteronomy 6 is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. And then these commands, impress them on your children. So the idea then is, all right, how do we do that for our children? And in the context of that is because as we do that, what we want for our children to secure is the very thing, that we need to believe for ourselves, that our identity is actually rooted not in how well we can get our kids to believe all the right things, do the right things, but our identity comes from Christ alone. And so it's that identity, because the idea, if we talk a lot about parenting long enough, about what we should be doing as parents, any parent's going to feel like that they're not doing it. And so kind of the idea then that it presses towards, because it's going to be very practical, but it presses towards then the idea of, are the thing that you need to rest in is your identity comes from Christ, not in your parenting, and not in how your kids end up behaving. It's in the work of Christ. And that's the very thing that we want to impress on our children. So that's the idea with Little Church. And then the addiction book, it comes from the proverb, as a fool returns to his vomit, so a fool, as a dog returns to his vomit, so a fool returns to his folly. Mm-hmm. And so just this idea that there's some things that need to be left behind. And so just trying to raise the question, all right, what's the vomit? What do you need to leave behind? And really try to do that in a way that, we don't just need a program, and the programs are necessary. The behavioral modification when it comes to addiction is absolutely essential. But how do we deal with the heart issues? Because addiction is a self-chosen slavery. And so there's a slavery. So there's certain things we can cast the blame on the addiction, on the disease, but it's also at the same time self-chosen, that we bear a responsibility. And so it kind of wrestles with that. With the hope of it primarily is pushing towards the rest in Christ, that God is the one who rescues in that us from those sins. And it will give some practical tools, but the ultimate goal is I'm not a counselor. I'm not going to give people kind of, all right, here's what they need to do. And so it's kind of to give the hope of the gospel. And then we'll kind of add at the end kind of an appendix that said, all right, he'll point you to talk to your pastor, talk to counselors when it comes to actually dealing with the things that are just deal with the addictions itself, because it'll wreak havoc on relationships and families and that kind
of thing. Now, we just recently, a couple months ago, you gave a breakout talk at the First Christ Hold Fast Conference this past February, which I was fortunate enough to attend. But the title of your talk was God Makes Pizza, Finding Freedom in Your Daily Work. And I was just thoroughly blessed and encouraged by this topic. But for those who, you know, perhaps weren't there or weren't able to listen, can you just sort of like give another quick summary of that talk and that subject of God at your work, God Makes Pizza?
Yeah. The idea with God Makes Pizza is just the idea that, in the Lord's Prayer, you can pray, give us this day our daily bread. The way that God does that is he provides bread through people fulfilling their callings. And so through the bread maker, through the grocer, through the staff who's stocking the groceries. And so the idea with God Makes Pizza came from just my family and I had dinner one night. And so the question when we ordered that pizza is, was God providing us pizza, or was I providing the pizza, or was the employees at the pizza store providing the pizza? And the reality of understanding God's calling, Luther called it the mask of God, is that God is actually hidden in people as they fulfill their calling serving us. And so was God providing the pizza? Yes. And the way he chose to do that for my family was through me spending money on the pizza, through website designers who designed a website so that I could place an order, through Apple, because I use their technology to place the phone call, through the employee who took my order, through the employees who made the pizza, through car manufacturers when I drove to pick up the pizza, just through tons and tons and tons of people, all fulfilling their vocations, God was serving my family by giving us pizza. And so there's a sacredness to all of our work. And there's a freedom that comes into it, because what most of us experience is not a sacredness to our work, but just the burdens, the responsibilities, the weight of our work. And there's something about seeing that, all right, God is active in us as we serve other people in those callings. And so that's kind of one of the main ideas. And there's several ideas of just unpacking that. But I believe that the vocation, God's calling, is one of the teachings that's central to the Reformation that I feel like has kind of got cast aside, that is incredibly practical for the person as they go about their daily lives. That vocation intersects with every area of our life. And I really have a heart for recovering that in the church and just kind of bringing that into the discussion. Because it's freeing when we don't feel like we need to be a missionary or a priest, but we can serve God wherever we are. Or even the burden when it comes to feeling like we need to have the dream job, or we need to do something else someday, or be the Fortune 500 entrepreneur. We can find a contentment in, all right, what I'm doing right now for my family as a dad, as a husband, what I'm doing right now as I go to the plant and work 9 to 5 and may not like the job. But I'm doing something sacred in it because I'm serving maybe people in my community, my family, my coworkers in that.
Yeah, and that's so true. And it reminds me of sort of what A.W. Tozer talks about in his Pursuit of God, sort of this idea of falling into a sacred or secular trap where we sort of put these two things in two separate categories and making, and we feel like if we're not in the sacred category that they're somehow better than us or whatever. And I think that this idea, you know, you talk about in your talk that, you know, a Christian shoemaker doesn't put crosses on his shoes. Right. He just makes really good shoes. And I think, you know, for me personally, as, you know, as a guy who prays and believes that he will be in what's called vocational ministry one day, you know, sometimes it can be discouraging or depressing, you know, if you just focus on this idea that I'm not in ministry yet. But I think what was really important from your talk is just ministry is all around you. It's right where you are. This is where you're supposed to be. And that was when, as you said, when you realize that, that's very freeing, and it just frees you up to do a lot of other things.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, the thing that we've kind of fallen into is it happened in Luther's day, just this elevation of the office of the priest, and mm-hmm. that's the sacred thing. But even in our modern Christian world, we still do the same thing. Even, and it may not be the priesthood per se, but even when we do like professional ministry, you elevate these worship leaders or these preachers or these celebrities or any of these guys to a certain status, or church needs to be done a certain professional kind of way, and you still end up elevating a certain vocation. Even the idea of calling something vocational ministry, or we'll use the word like bivocational, meaning you have two, but just even that language is like it misses something.
Yep. And I think for me, I came to that sort of realization, you know, after your talk, but also just over the natural thing, just, you know, God is telling me that right where you are, even though you're in this day job, so to speak, and you're not, you know, doing professional ministry, as you just said, this is where you're supposed to be. And this is show Christ to these people. And I think it just really hit home with me.
Yeah. And and that can be very freeing. And it also can be really difficult, because it can be freeing because you see kind of the gift of it, the gift of where you are. But in those moments where you don't like where you are, that's also the law at the same time. So there's a tension to that where it becomes really, really difficult. When you tell somebody, all right, love your neighbor. All right, that's a pretty ordinary calling. But if you don't like your neighbor, it becomes a really difficult calling too. And so that's the kind of the tension with vocation of, all right, it's where you are right now. And God wants you to serve right there, right now. But it may be difficult right now too. That doesn't make it not sacred, but there is the reality of that. And that's kind of the thing. And to be able to see the sacredness and the opportunity to serve and the opportunity to share the gospel where you are, and to serve others even when you don't share the gospel where you are, to see that as something sacred, while it's also being okay that, all right, this where you are right now may not be where you want to be long term, and that's okay too. Like your vocation doesn't necessarily need to be where God has called you permanently either. So in certain ones, I mean, vocation to your wife, that as long as you live, that is the way God ordained that vocation. But I mean, if you work in the factory, God might have that for a season, and then you might have something else for a season, and that's okay. where I feel like the way we often treat ministry is so many people rely on this inner feeling and this fuzzy sense, when sometimes it's just a little bit more simple of, all right, this is where God has called me, and I know because that's where I am, and that's what I'm doing. These are the talents. These are the gifts that I have. This is who is giving me a paycheck, and so I'm going to serve them in this way. And it's not that those inner senses don't matter. That does matter. I feel like I've been called. But I know that I am called to be a pastor because my church has called me to be one. Sometimes it's a lot more simple than we mm-hmm. think.
And going back to what you said, you know, working and being in your vocation or whatever, and you realize that you're supposed to love your neighbor, and then you realize that you're around maybe people that are probably difficult for you to love. That shows exactly, you know, that we are still need to give those people the gospel, the same gospel, even though they may be difficult or they may rub us the wrong way or whatever. And I think that's where it's really sobering.
Yeah. Well, that's where, and cause one of the things too, when we think about vocation is there's vocation on one hand, vocation is, there's the vocation that we all have as which we're all in a sense missionary. So that is the vocation of sharing the gospel, the Great Commission kind of calling that we have. And on the other hand, that it's the vocation of just serving other people, which can be with the gospel, but isn't only with the gospel. And so, one way of loving our neighbor might be, I just shovel their driveway because they couldn't do it themselves. And so that can be fulfilling our Christian vocation. And even when it's not exclusively a gospel proclamation kind of vocation. And so that's kind of where Luther with his whole idea with the Christian shoemaker, it's in that vocation. Sure. He might have an opportunity to share, to proclaim the gospel, to share the gospel with coworkers, with anybody. But also when he's serving, he may not even look that much different than the non-Christian because they both just want to make good shoes. And that's okay, because the Christian shoemaker is just making a good shoe for the sake of serving somebody. And the only difference is he does that by faith. And because it's by faith, that's actually considered a good work, because Christ has made it a good work.
Yeah. And I'll just share this quick story just because it reminded me of it. And I don't share this to loft myself up, but one of the nicest compliments I ever got was when I was working at Panera, and I was around these people all the time. And one of my coworkers just came up to me one day and said, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" And I was like, "Yes, I am." And I was like, "How did you know?" And she's like, "There's just something different about you." And I think that meant the world to me, just because it wasn't me just, you know, street preaching. It was just me living and doing the best job I could. Yeah. And people see that, they realize that, they know that there's something a little bit different there.
Right.
You know, and just sort of as we close here, if you can, if you had to say like one thing to any budding youth minister or guy who is seeking and desiring to go into the ministry, what would that one thing be, if you have one thing?
I heard somebody say this, and I said, if you can not do it, then don't. And so in other words, it is a calling. And so, if you feel that, really, really wrestle with it. Is this where God is calling you? And then that also be not just an internal thing, but from the counsel of other people, do they see that gifting in you, doing that in that education, all those things. But for me, it's like, I have to do this. Like, this is like, it's in me. Like I have to. Mm-hmm. And so do that. I mean, there are a lot better paying jobs you could do. And so if it's not something you have to do, don't.
Well, that's very good advice. I like the way you put that. Well, before we go off live here, I just want to say thanks, RJ. Appreciate you coming in here and talking with me and just chatting about this stuff. It's been very encouraging.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And again, thanks to RJ for coming on. Be sure to check out all of his stuff. He blogs at rjgrune.com. That's rjgrune.com, and at christholdfast.org. He's written a handful of books as well. His newest one just released today. In fact, it's called The Art of Law and Gospel. Be sure to check that out on Amazon and wherever else books are sold. Again, thank you for listening. As you know, this show is presented and produced by The Majesty's Men, a ministry which is entirely listener-supported. All the media you're consuming on the blog and through shows like this is done by guys who just love Jesus. But we have a lot of other plans and projects we'd like to accomplish, so if you'd like to help us with that, be sure to visit themajesty'smen.com/shop/donate. Offerings of any size are most welcome and greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening, commenting, and subscribing. I'll see you next time. Blessings.